Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of the Basketball News Podcast Network. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. We are here today for y'all. Nikias, how are you doing? Have you recovered from hashtag big flight?
I have recovered. Just one of the more frustrating experiences I've had in my adult life, I'll be honest. Very much a first world problem. I made it to my destination much later than I wanted to, but I did make it safely. So silver linings and such. But yeah, I'm going to be a little bit more diligent when booking flights, checking weather beforehand, taking earlier flights if they're available, because apparently I just flew too close to the sun. So you live, you learn. We made it to the arena very late, got to see some things. But yeah, I'm doing well. How are you? How was the weekend? Did you enjoy the basketball?
Yes, the basketball was great. Weekend was great. I'm very excited to be here. I'm happy to be here. I'm saddened that you had that experience, but these things happen. It's life. I'm excited to talk about some hoops, man. We're almost at the finish line. It's time.
It is indeed time. It is NBA Finals time. We have the Boston Celtics. We have the Golden State Warriors. We are going to dig into that for y'all a little bit later. Before we do, let's get into some WNBA talk because there was plenty of hoops over the weekend, allegedly for at least one of the teams that we're going to talk about on this podcast. But let's start with the Indiana Fever for a minute. They've had some movement. They fired head coach Marianne Stanley, who did not have a great record in her short stint with the team. Carlos Knox is the interim head coach now. He's been there for a game, which was a 101-96 victory over the Los Angeles Sparks, which they have some hashtag stuff going on as well. But we will save that for another time, I suppose. The Fever are fun. Let me start there.
Tell me why the Fever are fun, because I had you pegged as a Dallas Wings guy. And I'm you've turned left and gone full Indiana Fever. So tell me all about it.
I won't say full Indiana Fever. And also, like, the Wings have very much intrigued me. We will talk about them on a later episode. But for the Fever, there's so much young talent. And so you kind of bake in some foolishness because they're inexperienced and they're going against more experienced teams and better teams. So you just see Victoria Vivian's just kind of losing it sometimes. Destiny Henderson just kind of fouling people sometimes. Queen Egbo fouling people. Like, it's, you get the typical young player stuff, but man, they push the basketball all the time. All the time. And the one game with Carlos Knox at this point was the Sparks game. And one, he's just a joy to listen to. Like, it's very much like, it's kind of AAU energy to where he's like barking out everything. And you can hear him calling out coverages. Hey, they're flowing out of horns. He's calling for early help on the back line, which is different because under the previous coach, it felt like a lot of one-on-one. It was a pick and roll. You're going to defend it 2-on-2. If you die, you die. At least we're seeing some pre-rotations now, which is fun. And so hearing him call that stuff out, and then whenever there's a defensive rebound or even after a made basket, he's yelling at whoever's running point. Daniel Robinson, it's Destiny Henderson. They're like, no, push the ball. Push the ball, push the ball, push the ball. And the Sparks had no idea what to do with the level of pace that the Fever played with, particularly in that first half. So I'm having a blast with that. And they all, just the young talent in general is interesting to me. It was nice to see Melissa Smith back, watching her can threes, watching her get it off the bounce, watching her defend. She was fighting against Liz Cambage when she had that matchup, as was Queen Egbo. Emily Inksler, though, if she... The ball skill that she has at the four is not normal. She attacks with some real verve off the bounce. She's showcasing some three-point shooting ability. We'll see if it sticks, but the volume is perking up. The comfort level is also perking up. Defensively, she's all over the place. If she can figure out the finishing, particularly through contact, the Fever have something there. She's really good. She is really good.
She's very active. And we knew that coming into her coming into the W, but she's very active, and that's been fun to watch. the biggest thing I could say through the coaching change is this is an active fever team. Like, it seems dumb to say, but it felt like they didn't care. Made basket, missed basket, throwing the ball up, and the ball's ahead of half court with 20 on the clock. We're just going to see what happens. And that's fun. Like, I feel like this team is right in your wheelhouse as far as being a young team with talent, just doing things. And against the Sparks, they were able to find a win. Now, how that matures through the season, it'll be interesting, but I'm intrigued with the talent they have. And you mentioned Emily Inksler, her versatility is just key. And her energy she brings as far as being a not just on the boards, but also pick and roll, pick and pop, short roll. You can hit her and she'll make a play, finish. Fun stuff. I feel like Destiny's been really good too for Indiana. It's been fun stuff there.
She has. Like, and on that front, at least over the last two games, very small sample, I'm curious to see like how Carlos Knox uses her. Because again, he was put yelling at all of them to push the pace, which fits what Destiny wants to do. Though she does have a level of pacing with her beyond her years. But it was interesting to see, like, early in the week before the firing, they played the Chicago Sky, played them tough. It was back and forth to fair, and then late in the fourth quarter, they just could not get stops. Destiny got picked on a little bit. She, in various points of the game, just lost players on cuts. They back cut her to death. And the offense kind of stagnated. And we saw a little bit of the offensive stagnation in the fourth quarter's game against the Sparks. Because they had it in hand through the first three and a half quarters, really. But it then kind of slowed down, which happens late in games. And then once the Sparks, particularly Brittany Sykes, who continues to amaze me on the defensive end, but once they put her on Kelsey Mitchell and they were able to blow up whatever the initial action was for her, it was, well, what do we do now? Swing, swing, drive or contested shot. And again, that's just young team, young player stuff. But going back to the Destiny point, she didn't close that game. She closed out against Chicago and they got the better of it. In this game against the Sparks, it was Danielle Robson closing out and she played most of the fourth quarter. And I was like, huh, so young front court still. New head coach going with the veteran point guard to close it out. And so I wonder what the growth and what kind of leeway Destiny's going to have late in games. And honestly, which is going to be more important, her directing the flow offensively or if she can hold up defensively.
I imagine she'll be fine going forward. He just may have tried to get a win there. But with what she's proven as far as the growth from college to the W, there's no reason to see why she wouldn't be out there. So it'll be fun to monitor.
That is shall. I will be keeping a close eye on this team. Also, Kelsey Mitchell is just a bucket. I just think that's her ability to stop on a dime and pop from anywhere is amazing. And go ahead.
How'd you feel about the Sparks?
You know, valiant effort. Neko Gumake could not miss. What? I had to drop it on the pod at least once. But no, Neko was incredible. It was not a great Liz game. Jordan Canada was fine. Kennedy Carter, it's funny. We talked about the Kennedy Carter film in the last podcast, and it feels like now she's just hitting her stride. So that's fun. It's nice to see her look more comfortable on the court.
Yeah, that segment was ill-timed. I feel like she's completely done the thing. I think what she got to start in the last, yeah, it's been a fun ride there. But that's the Sparks right now. They have trying to figure out who they are and bring the pieces together. And some nights they look great, some nights they don't. And so it's going to be interesting to see if they can find that mix going forward. There are other teams that are ahead of the game, but half of the W is finding a way to get to the playoffs and excelling once you get there.
We just saw that with the Chicago Sky. Again, that was mostly injury stuff that they were trying to sort through in the beginning of last season, and they caught their stride in the postseason and won the whole gosh darn thing. Speaking of Chicago Sky.
What a segue. Nekias is in rare form.
Folks, we are here. Here today.
Hit the bingo card. A-C-E-S. Aces time.
It is indeed Aces time. This was the game that we hosted a watch party for. 83-76 victory for the Aces. it was a tale of two halves, it felt like. I and you really were keyed in on what the Aces half court offense would look like. It was a bit of a sticky situation in that first quarter. Pacing was a little bit off, trying to deal with Chicago's pressure. Again, they are an aggressive defensive team. They show high with Candace Parker. They'll show high with Emma Mesevin. Also, just as a brief aside, Azaree Stevens as a third big just seems unfair. Like, that was what kept popping in my mind as I was watching the Sky Fever game earlier last week. She is a starter, a high-minute starter on multiple teams. She's the third big in Chicago. But at any rate, they was trying to sort through that. And then we reached a point in the second quarter while the Sky just couldn't hit shots. But we reached a point in the second quarter where it felt like they were nailing all of the automatics. Show two, quick slip to Asia, short jumper. Two to the ball again, a slip to Derek Ahambi. He's cutting, rolling to the basket. Kelsey Plum sees two to the ball. She's driving past the hedge, getting downhill. She's making a kick out. Or she's driving past the hedge, reset, step back jumper in someone's face. It's like, okay, well, if the Aces are going to hit all of these notes, if you can't force them into turnovers, if the pacing has now improved, you can't bog them down late in the clock and they're just moving the ball to get whatever shot they want. I don't know what you want. I don't know what you do with this team. Because if they're humming like that on offense, and as we've both spoken about on this podcast, like the defensive activity has picked up for them this year. If the other team's pulling the ball out the basket and now the Aces are pressing you and forcing you into misses or turnovers, they're running on the other end and they're humming in the half court. Like, this is just the best team in basketball.
Strong take from you, but I will agree there was like a machine-like quality from the Aces in that game against the Sky. Their guard play is so important. Whether it's Plum, whether it's Young, whether it's Gray, the pressure they can put on teams is key. You have someone who is going to put pressure with Wilson in any action you put her in. You combine that with your defensive versatility and the ability to get stops and always play in a flow. That gives you so many more opportunities. And in that game, once the Sky started to show two to the ball, started to show hard, the Aces were able to pick that apart. And that's important as you develop going forward in the season as it progresses, because you're going to have to find your way in the half court. And that's where Wilson becomes so important. And even Hamby, like, I feel like Hamby could be more dangerous as a screener, to be honest with you, with the lineups the Aces have. If she's screening, who are you helping off of? The guards all are pressure points. Wilson's space, you don't want to necessarily help off her. You can use Hamby as a pressure point. But anyways, I just think the blend of what the Aces are presenting right now is just really tough to deal with. And their ability to get stops and push on the other end with their guards playing the way, like Kelsey Plum is unlocked on a different degree. And Young and Gray are also playing great. You throw Wilson in there, what do you do? And this is me, king of, hey, the half-court offense isn't great. And they're playing at such a high level that I can't even make that point right now. Can't even make it a bit.
You could. I'll shoot you some bail. I think you can if you hammer home what the fourth quarter looked like in particular. Because it felt like they went into prevent off. In the fourth, like, they had a lead, and in addition to out executing the Sky also just could not make shots. Even when they generated open stuff, they just couldn't knock anything down. So
they couldn't make anything all day.
Yeah, like, it just wasn't great. So I feel like that kind of gave the Aces a sense of security that they probably can't play with if the Sky were shooting better, because it just bogged down, and then they were still getting the automatic. But as you mentioned, Derek Ahambi could carve teams up as a roller just for how they're playing the coverage, but they were spaced out on the weak side. It's a pick and roll with Asia Wilson. And so now it's a pre-rotation way off of Derek Ahambi. So they shut down the initial pick and roll, and now they're late in the clock. It's like, well, now Asia has to create. She can make tough shots. She did make tough shots. She finished with 22-16. It wasn't the most efficient outing, but she made shots when they counted. But from a process standpoint, they made life more difficult on themselves.
They did, but it's such a tricky balance, because if you know you're putting two on the ball and you can get Asia just in the short roll, making decisions, making plays, why not go to that. So I can kind of understand why you might balance that or how you go with that. My thing is just, can they keep the tempo up and can they find ways to execute in the half court? Because they're going to need that as the season progresses, as they get to the playoffs.
Yeah, they are. And to your point, I was able to ask Coach Becky Hammon after that game, like, how did...
The hashtag is big time, folks.
The hashtag is big Zoom. We don't have to do this. I had the Zoom link for the post-game presser, so I wanted to see what's going on. But no, I asked Erica Hamby first, like how she felt about her usage in the fourth quarter, being space versus being a roller. Like she wanted to be a little bit more active. She felt like she could provide a little bit more as a roller and as a cutter. And so she finished that game with, I think, 19 shot attempts, just off of a lot of those roles and just getting busy on the offensive glass. And she even made the joke post-game, like, yeah, I'm not going to get that many shot attempts in another game. But that was that. Becky Hammon did say that she didn't like the fourth quarter process. She felt like things were a little bit too slow. So we'll see how that changes moving forward. But I don't know, man. Like, that was a fun game to watch. If they can ball up the second quarter, like, I don't know what you do from a process standpoint. That was just – it was a buzzsaw. Like, think about with the way that they're playing right now. Chelsea Gray is their fourth option. Imagine working super hard with trapping or switching or whatever it is. You get the aces out of their initial action, 8 seconds left on the shot clock, and now you have to deal with Chelsea Gray one-on-one. You cut off a Kelsey Plum pick and roll, you double Asia on a post up or something, you duck under screen against Jackie Young, who didn't shoot super well in this game. You cut all that off, and now it's Chelsea Gray you got to deal with a bunch of contested jumpers. Like, this team.
You're very excited. So why don't you talk about the Mercury or something?
How about you talk about the Mercury or something? I feel like I am on punishment from talking about this team.
You're not on punishment. You just continuously slander the GOAT, DT. Anyways, the Dream got them out of there on Sunday. Got them all the way out of there early. And didn't stop. Like, the Dream are fun. They're one of the most fun teams to watch when they are doing what they're supposed to do. And I thought the defense was key because they had a lot of activity, which bothered Phoenix for whatever reason. But with their offense, with their flow, with their tempo, pushing it off any make or miss, even if it's a made basket, that ball is outletted. They're up on the court and they're looking to attack. The dribble penetration that they can create and force help and get in the driving kick and play out of the flow. When they're humming like that, it's tough. And Phoenix had a very difficult time keeping the ball in front, and they always had to help, and it created not only open threes, but also layups. And when the Dream are humming like that, there's not much you can do with that. So for me, when it comes to the Dream going forward, it's just, can they do enough defensively to allow themselves the opportunities to push in transition, to keep that flow offensively? Or will they have the games where they're bogged down in the half court and have to execute consistently? Or how do they deal with teams keeping the ball in front? That's the big battle for me with Atlanta. But when they are going, they are going.
They're flying around. And even in the half court, I think the Dream tweeted out a clip from, I want to say it was their first bucket of the game, but it was one of their first few buckets of the game. I love the way that they're using Ryan Howard. Like, I've already gushed about how good she is, period. But the fact that they are already finding different ways, they're running her off staggers, they're running off her, their clear side, and then run off her flare into the empty side and let her get going that way. One of the early possessions of the game, it's her on the baseline, runs up, sets a cross screen for Cheyenne Parker to get her a bucket inside. And it's just like, oh, yeah, that's right. She's a ridiculous movement shooter. You don't want to switch that. And as much as I talk about, or I've talked about, the potential size issue that Atlanta has. Because again, Cheyenne Parker's been, she's been very good this season, honestly. But again, she's more four than five to me, at least defensively. But if you're able to get a bunch of usage out of her that way, and again, you're able to boost the activity on the defensive end and force turnovers or push after misses, like, that doesn't really matter as much. And the Mercury, man, their defense is not in a good place right now. It's just not in a good place right now. I'm glad you hit on the dribble penetration because it just hasn't been good. if there's one thing I think is fair to say about DT, the containment just has not been there for her this year.
My headphones went out. What'd you say?
I see. But no, that was it wasn't a great performance. It was a noon tip.
So. No, they didn't have it. You could tell early on in that one, the Mercury was in retrograde.
Ah, there it is. As
some would like to say. But offensively, it's interesting because teams see Tina Charles and they're like, hey, any post-up, we're going to double. That doesn't necessarily create an advantage for Phoenix. And Diana Taurasi comes off the screen, hey, we're going to be up here. And that doesn't always create an advantage for Phoenix. And then Skylar Diggins-Smith, her attacks in transition, her attacks pick and roll, doesn't always create an advantage for Phoenix. So it's kind of like they have the talent, but it hasn't necessarily been a pressure point to where they can take advantage of it. And that's what I'm looking for them to progress. It's been a tougher start than I'm sure they expected, but there's enough talent in that room to make it work. It's going to take a lot more work than probably they expected.
Yes, a lot more work. Going to need some health on the shooting point. No Sophie Cunningham in that game. I'm sure she could help boost the spacing of the half court offense. That's the nicest thing I'm saying. You got to take that. But that would certainly help. Just a quick shout out to Diamond the Shield, who has been, if not between her and Tina Charles, like Diamond the Shield's probably been their best player. The jumper has improved. The drives have certainly been there. He's been flying around defensively. What's the face for?
What?
The Diamond Shields has been good, man. What's the problem?
No, you're good. Keep going. No.
That's all I got. Do you want an ISO on the New York Liberty? We got a request to talk about what's going on in New York.
I don't really want to. Tough series of games for them in Seattle. Liberty season has arrived and it seems like it's gone already. They just have not found a way to figure it out on either end of the floor. And it's a combination of things. Obviously, Laney being out is not ideal, but defensively, it's not great. Offensively, it's also not great. The Liberty will have like six possession of turnovers and then deliver an excellent possession of basketball where there's cutting and movement and they execute and pass the ball, move the ball, get a layup, and then it goes away. It's the most confusing thing I've ever seen in my life. Combine that with teams just throwing Sabrina out of rhythm with coverages. Like, I thought early on it was just activity. Like, hey, we're going to put you on the ball. It's fine. We'll take you away. You can't lead the dance. But they're mixing it up, especially in the Storm two-game series. It felt like we're sliding in unders. We'll throw in switches. So while you may want to get to your pull-up, you can't lead the dance because you don't know when it's going to come. We may trap you. We may blitz you. We may go under. We may switch. And that takes that away as a pressure point, especially if she's not shooting the ball well. And it feels like the Liberty have just like one too many bigs for what they want to do. All their bigs are good, but you're trying to play two of them. So which two can you play together? And can you unlock both of them at the same time? So if you have Dolson, you have Natasha, you have Han, are they all going to play well together? Or are they just going to have moments in time? And is your offense going to be able to sustain outside of that? It's just been disappointing so far.
I am sorry to hear that, good sir. That is.
I just want to talk about the Storm's defense, but you just wanted to, whoever requested for me to just cry through the Liberty season, salute to you, sir or ma'am.
You can also talk about the Storm's defense if you'd like.
The Storm's defense has been really good. Brianna January does not get enough respect on her name, and Gabby Williams is also doing great things.
Yes, she
and
is.
That team defensively has quietly climbed up the we're super annoying ranks. like just watch them, watch their activity, watch the rotations, and you'll see, oh, they're not playing around. And honestly, that was probably the biggest problem for Seattle last year. Couldn't get enough stops. This year, not necessarily a problem. So as they get healthier, as they get their complete team, hopefully.
Bring Izzy back.
Yeah, just two hands in the air with everything that's going on there. Once they get that together, they have a flow offensively. They have pressure points. And defensively, they have a stronger base. It's going to get interesting. Mm-hmm. Keep an eye on the storm. Rain's coming.
That's a bar. All right. That's some quality stuff right there. Okay. Sorry to the Mercury. Sorry to the Liberty. The Aces are good. The Sky are also good. They just lost to the Aces. The Fever are fun. The Wings are also fun. The Dream are fun. Who are we missing? I feel like we...
Probably the Sun. The Sun. Also, we got to talk about the Sun. They're very good. The injury is tough, but they're very good.
That defense is insane. Sun Mystics on Saturday, which a little bit of a bummer because EDD had scheduled rest. But also, both of those teams defensively this year have been insane. Like, the Sun were a historic defense last year, and they don't look that far off as they also work to get healthy. But that was a slugfest, an absolute slugfest on Saturday.
I'm surprised. Well, how do you feel about the Mystics? I feel like they're one of the tougher teams to evaluate because they're very good, but also they're going to have to deal with the lineup changes throughout the season because you're trying to keep EDD fresh. Where are you at with them?
Like, one, I start with their defense because they have just been blowing up offenses all year long. And the big one was what they did to the Dream last week, to where it was a scoreless game for Ryan Howard, which that alone should tell you just how ridiculous that defense was. But they just shut down everything. Like, Ariel Atkins will get in your jersey. Natasha Cloud will get in your jersey. All of their bigs are active and they keep their hands high. So they're playing this Obersko, kind of similar to Chicago, to where if you're running a pick and roll, they'll hedge and then get back, or they'll just full out trap you. And EDD, when she's been on the floor, she's brought it. Elizabeth Williams just got back in the fold, former all-defensive team selection. She gets active. Myesha Hines-Allen is also active. Shakira Austin she has to be mad that Ryan Howard is in her draft class, because she would be the rookie of the year if not for Ryan Howard. And honestly, if she keeps playing the way she's playing on both ends of the floor, like, I think Ryan Howard would still win the award, but she's going to make that a closer race than people want to admit. She has been very good, both ends. And so I look at I think of the activity from the bigs, the ball pressure that they get. And again, I'll let you shout out Rui if you want to again, because her ball pressure has been fun to watch. The defense has been fun. The offense, I feel like, I don't want to say it's a given, but I think when you have EDD in the lineup, you're drawing two to the ball somewhere, or at the very least you should. Like, she's just a walking pressure point for an offense. And so it's more so just worry about, like, all right, how else are these other pieces going to flow in? Like, with Myesha trying to fight for a minute, Shakira Austin in the front court, again, Elizabeth Williams, who isn't a super offensive threat, but has some utility as a screener and as a finisher. Like, how do you fit all that in together? But EDD makes them whole. So I'm just kind of like, get this team healthy. Let's see a 5-6 game stretch with full assortment and see where they rank among, like, the contenders. Because I think they're that good if the defense is where it's at right now.
That's fair. I'll take it.
Just taking that's my line. All right. Let's get into the NBA final, because this should be.
Before we get to that, do you want to talk about Miami real quick?
You know, we can. They lost to the Boston Celtics in 7. They had one heck of a season. I think that's the big thing that I would push in terms of the Miami. To deal with the injuries to Jimmy Butler, Kyle Lowry, Bam Adebayo, Tyler Hero missed time. to not have that four play real minutes together throughout the regular season because of the injuries and COVID and things of that nature, to rack up the one seed in the East in spite of that is an amazing accomplishment. For Duncan Robinson to get the contract extension he did, to start the season the way that he had, he loses his starting spot to Max Strus, which is a testament to how good Max Strus was during the regular season and how good he was during the postseason. The shots didn't fall, but he held up defensively in a way that I did not anticipate him doing. To get that kind of season from him, to get the season they got from Gabe Vincent, the flashes that we saw from Victor Oladipo in the second half of the season and during the playoff, there was so much goodness with this Heat team. And it stinks for them to bow out in seven and lose, I think, three games on their home court throughout the series. Like, you zoom out, that ain't great. But 50-plus wins, a one seed, an elite defense, a very good offense overall, even with a questionable half-court offense. Like, they were almost there. And I don't know how much more we can say about Jimmy Butler at this point. The run that he had in the postseason, his ability to get downhill, the tough shots that he made, still having the energy to be a menace on and off the ball defensively. I think he's answered, like, can you win a title with Jimmy Butler as your best player? Yes. Yes, you can. I think you absolutely can. What I will say, and where I think that question in general gets a little bit skewed, it's like, yeah, you can win a title with Jimmy Butler as your best player. It just brings more importance into who your number two, three, four guy is. Like, he doesn't answer questions in a way that a Giannis does, for example. A Giannis is just better on both ends. But Jimmy is a tier below that. And so if I feel like he's in that 9-12 range. And so with that, that's where you need your second option to be a little better. You need your third option to be better. And that's where the injuries really hurt. And that's where some of the half-court limitations for Bam right now, that hurts. Because I think Bam can be your second-best player. I don't know if Bam can be your second-best slash second-most reliable scorer. And I think that's what Miami needed, particularly with Hero dealing with the injuries and with Kyle Lowry still dealing with the hamstring stuff. They needed Bam to be a consistent number two in that way. And with the problems that Boston posed, he couldn't be that consistently. And some of that is on him. And just some that I've said in watch parties, on Twitter, on the podcast. Like, some of it is the mindset for him. He has to help take the bull by the horn sometimes. But there are some limitations there that you hope another off-the-dribble threat can kind of alleviate. So Jimmy doesn't have to carry the way that he did in Game 6 and in Game 7 and in Game 1 and portions of Game 2, even though Boston just kind of blew that one out the water. And so if we're looking forward, I think Miami's big question is, okay, who can be our number two scorer? Not even necessarily their second best player. Because we know what Bam can do as a roller. We know what he can do as a playmaking hub. He is one of the four or five best defenders on planet Earth. And I think he's a little bit better than that. But conservatively, he's a top five defender in this sport. I think he can absolutely be your second best player. I think Jimmy can be your best player. Figuring out 3, 4, 5, I think is where Miami has to go. And that's going to factor into the thinking of the Tyler Hero extension. He's extension eligible this offseason. He just won Sixth Man of the Year. You saw how important he was when he wasn't there. But can he be that guy? We don't know. What is the health of Kyle Lowry going to look like moving forward? We don't know. But overall, heck of a team, heck of a year. I don't think they're going anywhere.
Well, I mean, I don't think anyone anticipated Miami to do what they did this season. And they did it. They were in that position for a reason, through injuries to multiple players, and they were a game away. So I don't take anything away from the Miami Heat. What's interesting will be, what do they do going forward? I think the biggest missing piece is, you know, you wish you had been healthy through this loss. Because now, what's your next step? You didn't have a healthy Lowry. You didn't have a healthy Hero. You didn't have a healthy Jimmy. So it's not like you have the direct answer as to, is what we have flawed or is this the move we should have made? I think with Bam, that Game 7, that's the mindset you want to see from him. That's the aggression you want to see from him. And you have to now be able to understand what you have to do as a team, not just grind through the regular season, but to win in the playoffs. I thought they did enough to defeat the formula, so to speak. But you ran into a mirror series, and only one of y'all was going to come out. Mm-hmm. Both of you are good defensively. Both of you have flaws offensively. Only one was going to find a way to win. And unfortunately for Miami, they just couldn't put enough points on the board to get Boston to shift. And as you watch that series, that became the story of it. Would Miami be able to get it done? And to their credit, even to get it to seven was something else. Mm-hmm. And to get it to a Jimmy Butler pull-up attempt. Because that, there were people leaving that arena. What was it? They were down 9 with 128 left, right? Mm-hmm. It felt like, oh, this is a wrap. Let me close my laptop up. Let me shut it down. And here comes Jimmy Butler about to pull up a three, trying to win it. By the way, can we?
Hey, you want to talk about the shot?
No, can we just improve our discussion with these things, please? Man took a shot, tried to win it. At the end of the world, like, yes. Al Horford wanted him to take that. No, he didn't. No player wants anyone to take a three when you're up two. Like, let's just communicate that very loudly. There's not a player, even if you're playing on someone's strengths, you don't want that person to take a pull-up three in front of your face when you're only up two. So just throw that over the top rope. But Jimmy Butler is going to be a very interesting player to analyze going forward. Like, the things he's done record book wise.
Yeah.
Like, he's like Dirk without the hate. Like, what, you can't throw his resume over the top rope. You can't say he's not X, Y, Z, but also he just doesn't have a ring. Like, what's missing for Jimmy?
He's got the all NBA selections. He's got the all defensive selections. Like, he's most of the time all star. He's led a team to the finals and had a ridiculous series in that finals. Just terrible series against Milwaukee last year, and he bounces back with this. And that's kind of the underrated portion of this Jimmy thing. Like, he was rightfully criticized for what happened against Milwaukee. He just did not have it. The Bryn Forbes outscored him four series. Milwaukee put Giannis on him, and there went to pick and rolls. Like, that happened. And then he bounces back with dominating Atlanta, dominating Philly. Ridiculous game one. Solid game two, gets hurt in the middle of game three, and he was already dealing with the knee stuff anyway. Very objectively bad stretch 3-5, and that matters as well. But then game six happens, and the game seven happens. What did Jimmy have in the first half of game seven? Like, what, 24 or something like that in the first half? With Miami kind of dead in the water beyond him and Bam? Like, that. I don't know how you play the result with Jimmy at this point. But that man's just good.
You play the result because it's easier. And speaking of playing the result, where are the folks who said Ime Udoka shouldn't be a coach halfway through the season? Where are they? Can you point them out to me? Can you find them for me? I haven't heard anything from them. All the energy was, oh man, he's terrible. Get him out of here. This man's in the finals in year one. Stay patient with coaches. Understand the process. They found a way to get it done. And have an appreciation for Boston's playoff run. This is a team that's incredibly difficult for some people to quantify or understand because it's non-traditional. They're a very good team. We can both agree on that, right, Nikias? They have one of the best defenses in the league. I think you have the Nikialytics on that.
They finished first in defensive rating this year.
Interesting. All right. Offensively, they turned a corner once the year turned. You right, Nikias?
Yes. Yes, they did.
Okay. So they got better as the year went along. very good on both ends of the floor, but they have flaws. And these flaws are things we can all see, whether it's you, me, or anyone watching the TV. They have flaws. They almost forgot how much they were leading by against Miami in that game 7. But they've worked through those flaws. They've executed at a different level. And that becomes a difficult team to evaluate once you get to this time of the year. Because usually we're talking finals time, it's a championship time. Here's this team. They're great because of X, Y, Z. How many people know why Boston's really great?
Good question.
How many people appreciate what this Boston run is? It's not necessarily we just bring this to the table and we win. They have to grind through this. Offensively, they have the talent. They have the superstars. They have the space and the lineups, but they also have to create things. Defensively, they're elite, but they also have to figure things out. And look at this playoff run. Look what they did to Kevin Durant. This is no disrespect to KD. Please do not throw me over the top rope on Twitter. It's just a funny statement, sorry. But the activity they had and game plan wise to make everything difficult on him. And then offensively, we're going to attack your pressure points. We're going to use our size to an advantage. We win this series. Now you face Giannis. And you have to face a Milwaukee defense that's saying, hey, we're going to put two on the ball. We're going to protect the paint. We'll throw some drop in there. How are you guys going to figure that out? Like offensively, that was my question mark for this Boston team. Can they figure it out? And they found a way to get to their flow, get to their tempo, create offense out of that, survive those moments, and thrive. And this Miami series, a mirror series. And while the offensive execution wasn't perfect, they knew what they had to do. Hey, we have Jason Tatum. We'll attack those matchups. We'll get the pressure points. Dribble penetration was the great equalizer for Boston in this series. Whenever things broke down, cut, drive, force help, kick, play out of it. And they consistently found those pressure points as that series progressed. And that allowed them to hold a, 8-10 point lead for what felt like forever in that game.
Mm-hmm.
Until the end, they were constantly just like, oh, you guys are coming. Here comes the point. Here comes a bucket. Here we go. That deserves respect. And to look at making the trade and shortening the roster and shortening the rotation, and now you have the contribution of Derek White, who looked like he shouldn't be in the playoff rotation to some, to be an impact player in this conference final series. You look at getting Peyton Pritchard, who was on the bench during the season. He was on the bench. He was seated. And you make the trade, now you have his contributions going forward. You have multiple bigs. You have Al Horford contributing. You have Jalen and Jason Tatum contributing at a high level. You unlocked Marcus Smart on both ends of the floor. You trusted what you believe in. So I would say to anyone who was out here saying Ime Udoka doesn't know what he's doing, you should reevaluate how you think about the game of basketball. Sorry, I made the rules.
Big bars. That's what I'm talking about. Talk your talk. Major props to Ime Udoka. Major props to this Boston team. Not going to rehash everything. You just hit on the entire team. Aside from Grant Williams, he's been really good. But.
Oh, my bad. No,
it's fine. I'm just.
Wait. I went on a 10-minute rant and forgot about Grant Williams.
He contributed to KD having the rough series that he had. Also gave Giannis some trouble. And Bam did not have fun against Grant Williams, which that was just a very under-the-radar thing. So much fun reading multiple pieces about how Grant Williams has basically been guarding Bam since they were youngsters. And so, like, now it makes even more sense. Like, one, Grant's just a good defender, period. But the fact that Grant's been defending Bam since high school, like, no wonder Bam didn't have. Like, Grant's already really good defensively. Bam has some shot creation stuff that he has to work through. You add in the added experience before they even got in the league. And when they faced each other, when I guess Grant was in Kentucky, Grant was in Tennessee, Bam was in Kentucky. You add in that too, it's just like, okay, it probably makes sense why Bam versus Grant Williams wasn't the mismatch you might think it might be. That's very cool. This is a pro Grant Williams podcast, as you can see. But nah, this is Boston team. This has been a run, man. This has been a run. KD, Kyrie, Nets, Giannis, Bucks, Jimmy Butler, Bam, Heat. And now they have to face the Golden State Warriors. Like, this is fun. This is fun. It is
fun. And it should be fun. We should keep it fun. But I saw, like, even you mentioned the run, and people be like, boy, what a run Boston's on. And people would be like, oh, they only faced KD, and then Middleton was out, and then Miami couldn't score. And it's like, why do we take so much time to discredit teams? Yeah. Like, why is that a thing we do? Like, Boston were to get to this point. Golden State were to get to this point. They are here for a reason. And let's enjoy what they bring to the table. Are you ready? Are you excited for this finals?
Yes, very much so.
I know you are. You said, I can't wait to talk about the series like 72 hours ago. So let me hear what you got.
Let's talk about this series between, in terms of defensive rating, the two best defenses in basketball. This is going to be a junkie series at points. One, the defenses are really good. Marcus Smart, Al Horford, Robert Williams, Grant Williams, Derek White, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown. Ridiculous defensive personnel. Golden State has freaking Draymond. Kevon Looney has been working his tail off all postseason. Andrew Wiggins has been good. Klay Thompson is finding his way, but you know the pedigree that he has. Steph Curry has been amazing defensively. They're probably getting Gary Payton II at some point this series, and he was one of the best guard defenders in basketball when he's on. They both have a whole lot of guys. And on top of that, we saw the bad of Boston, where you have some wild passes, you have some of the ball security issues that we saw from Jaylen Brown. They will turn the ball over sometimes. Golden State, as fun as they are when they're humming and moving around and relocating and bombing threes everywhere, they also have a case of turnoveritis sometimes. And so I am excited to see how they sort out the matchups, and also which offense can take care of the ball. Because that's what really can open this series up. Because if either of those teams get to play in transition a bunch, like, it's not going to be a good time for them.
It's interesting you brought that up, turnover-wise, but I feel like these are two teams that are, like, prepared to see each other right now in different ways. We talked about Boston's path, but you think about Golden State's path to this. You face an elite player in Jokic. You face an elite player in Ja, and then have to deal with a team base once Ja goes down. And then you face a Dallas team that has Luka and is not afraid to matchup hunt and is not afraid to get after you defensively. That's not bad prep for facing Boston based on the run that they've had. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to see what's going to happen, because in theory, you have a Boston defense that should present Golden State with a challenge they haven't faced yet. They're going to have to deal with activity. They're going to have to deal with size. They're going to deal with length. They're going to deal with different lineups. And part of Golden State, it's not just, hey, do they not turn it over? They're going to have to deal or execute offensively in a way where they have a blend. Pick and roll, off ball cuts, dribble penetration. The paint points have been huge for them. They have to present all that. Can Boston take something off the table? And can Golden State find a way to execute? Can the Celtics get the Warriors into those stretches offensively where you see the little thing on the bar that says Golden State scoreless and, whatever the timer says? And then can they generate easy offense off of that? And Golden State, on the flip side, has an offense that can present Boston with a different challenge than they've seen. Now, here's the interesting point. Brooklyn had star talent. Not necessarily the movement. Milwaukee had star talent. Not necessarily the movement. Miami had the movement, but Boston did a good job of taking them off of that. Like, that's one of the underrated parts of that series. Mm-hmm. Boston took that off-ball movement off the plate early in that series with their activity, with their switches, with their physicality, denying the ball. They just kind of moved that to the side. Can they do that against Golden State? Because if you look back, even just mentioning the Golden State-Dallas series, when Dallas was able to do that, it looked a little bit different. If you could take that off the plate against Golden State, now they have to really do something else, and it looks different. So if Boston can have that kind of momentum, if they can have that kind of activity, that's going to be intriguing.
Let's start there with Golden State and their movement. Let's start with Steph Curry. The regular season beatings, just two games, a lot of guys missing in both of those. Boston was an entirely different team during December matchup. Josh Richardson played in that game. Romeo Langford played in that game. Like, it's in terms of personnel, it was just different. But from a scheme perspective.
Really? Was it? No one on Twitter told me the different matchups while I was watching that game. I had no idea. Silly me.
That was so much better than I thought it was going to be.
Off of free content. Yo, you know no one we play? Yeah, I know. I am aware. You misspelled your welcome.
Oh, that's beautiful. Okay. Back to Stephen Curry. Since the personnel was a little bit different, from a scheme perspective, Steve, what did you see Boston try to do against Steph Curry? And what are some things that you, from that regular season series, that you think will carry over into this final series?
I think Steph Curry is going to present a different challenge for Boston, but I also think that Boston prepared for it. It's a weird deal, so stick with me. Curry is going to put two on the ball in pick and roll, and that's going to force Robert Williams to react, Al Horford to react in a way they haven't had to. And they can also run sets for him off ball that's going to force Boston to react and put pressure on him. Now, off ball, it's going to be interesting. Can they get the denials? Can Marcus Smart bother that? Does that take that off the table? I'm intrigued as to that part. But Curry's different than what Boston's seen. They haven't seen that kind of shooting threat in this playoff run. And the big key for me is, can Steph Curry create drives against this Boston defense? Can he get the paint touches against this Boston defense? Because if he can, that's going to change the landscape of this series for me. If you're Boston, you know what he can do. You know it's tough, but you kind of hope you can keep him as a shooter, I guess, and contest his looks.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's able to put two on the wall in pick and roll, hurt you off ball, and then also drive in pick and roll or in transition, that's a lot to deal with. Mm-hmm. So they have to find a way to take something off the table. And I don't know exactly what's going to be, but I know that Dallas series looked a lot different once Steph was able to, hey, you know I can shoot, but also I'm driving. What are you going to do about it? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what you hope the activity of Smart will do, is take that away. How that works is going to be interesting.
I'm curious. I think for Boston, the key is, which is a duh thing, this is what we've been saying about Steph Curry his entire career. Very obvious. What makes Steph great is that it's obvious and you still can't do it because he's that good. They have to stay attached to him. Boston was the switchiest team in basketball this year. They're going to try to flatten out some of Golden State's action. But it can't just be a switch. They're going to have to keep a body. They're going to have to grab as much as they can without it being to make sure Steph can't get the clean push-offs or get the clean launches when he's flying off these screens. Because all he needs is a sliver to get the shot up. And for defenses, if you see him get that sliver, Golden State's won already. Because now you're reacting. Someone else is, oh, crap, I got to step up. That creates two to the ball. Someone's slipping. There's Draymond on a 3v2. There's Kevon Looney on a 3v2. Here's Andrew Wiggins cutting from the strong side corner now because you had to help down somewhere. And that's all the chaos you need. So Marcus Smart is going to have his work cut out for him. I think this is going to be another big Derek White series as well. And I think that's going to benefit Boston as well. Being able to, you know, barring injury or foul trouble, being able to have 48 minutes of Marcus Smart or Derek White on the floor, I think is going to be huge for them. because you talked about the way that they were able to take Miami's movement off the table. That's a lot of Derek White in particular, because if Smart got back in that series and was healthier, like, he took the Jimmy Butler matchup. And the screen navigation was important as well. He's ducking under and beating Jimmy at certain points and making things like making life tough on him. But what Derek White was able to do to Max Strus for most of that series, like, it was insane, the level of screen navigation he had there. And so I would anticipate seeing some White on Curry as well in this series, just to trail him, stay on his hip, make him uncomfortable. I'm kind of toggling between what's better for Boston in that regard as well. Because you mentioned making Steph a shooter. Like, I wonder if, because of the size that they have in the front court, and I think they'll have a couple of help points if Steph is driving. If he's driving, I think you're going to see Robert Williams be able to help off of Kevon Looney if he gets that matchup. Or they may help off of an Andrew Wiggins and kind of force him to beat them with perimeter shots. I wonder if it might be a little better to four step downhill versus getting him going as a shooter. Like, am I insane for pondering that?
A little bit, but continue.
Okay. That's why I'm asking the question. Because I do worry about him igniting and what that can open up for everyone else. And I think this Boston team, just from a size perspective, presents some, I guess, some issues that you didn't see in the Dallas series in particular with those drives. But I think Boston is more equipped to defend those.
Well, let's talk about it real quick before you go full Steph. How do you feel about Boston's two big lineup in this series? How do you feel about the Horford-Robert Williams duo?
I am a little worried about Rob in the series.
Why?
I'm worried about him in terms of the off-ball action. That's kind of my big thing with him. And that's more so health-based, to be completely honest, because I just don't know where the knee is. And so I would worry about him having to track, like, just a lot of the split cuts and stuff like that, or the loony action that you have talked about often.
Well, I mean, the interesting part with Williams is, on paper, there's not really an ideal place to hide him. Mm-hmm. If you put him on Looney, that's fine, but that also means Looney's going to be involved in action, so he's going to have to defend. If you put him on Draymond, which they put Tatum on Draymond, I feel like, in those matchups, which intrigued me. But if you put him on Draymond, sure, he can help, but unlike PJ Tucker, that's going to unlock some other things, because Draymond's always hunting for the next play, and that's a shooter flying off. So it's not quite the PJ Tucker I can help off and then just kind of sag off as he tries to find someone. That's like a quick handoff or pitch to a shooter. Mm-hmm. Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, or Wiggins, or Poole, depending who's in the game. You have to deal with that. So how he kind of navigates those actions is going to be key to me. And I'm interested to see, can Golden State make Al Horford a pressure point? No team has been able to hit that button this playoff run. Not a one. And that's where I want to see, does Al come out in a drop? Or drop adjacent? You know, how does he come out? I look at Boston's coverages based on what Al does to me, because he's the most versatile defender they have. So how he defends tells me what Boston's trying to do. And if he's going to come out, you know, switchy or droppy, it's going to tell me what they're trying to accomplish. And who they put him on is going to tell me what they're trying to accomplish. But that's where it gets interesting, because Boston has a size and length that Golden State just has not seen so far this postseason.
But the closest they got was the Memphis series. And because of foul trouble, Steven Adams was also out with COVID, but foul trouble with Jaren. Like, the guards in Memphis just aren't the guards in Boston. And so it feels like there's just going to be less space for the Warriors to operate with. I guess on the Al Horford front, what coverage do you want to see him in?
Well, I think ideally from a Boston perspective, you want to see him be able to do multiple things. Depending on who I'm guarding, I could be in a drop, especially depending on who's in the action with Golden State. And even tying it to the Horford deal, if I'm Boston, yeah, it's different than the Miami guards we just faced, but do we have to worry about anyone outside of Steph? Can we be comfortable in a drop versus Clay, Wiggins, Poole? Can we live with that? Can we work with the help we have and make them make shots? Like, that intrigues me. Do they feel that way? And it kind of ties in with the Horford thing. Can the bigs in this series hold up? You know, we've seen what Kevon Looney and Robert Williams did. Both had big impacts in their respective conference finals. Robert Williams is a roamer and a helper. Can he get there in this series? Can Kevon Looney be a switch big, right? So we talk about Al, but what coverage does Kevon Looney start with? We saw him switch against Luka. That's great, but Jason Tatum provides a little bit of a different challenge. Mm-hmm. In the sense that he may make quicker decisions. He may be able to attack and draw fouls. And now, if that happens, you're in a different scenario. So I feel like Looney holding up is going to be key. I feel like Robert Williams holding up is going to be key. It's tough. Like, in theory, Curry should force you to come to the level. But is Al Horford going to be able to play in between?
I got you. Actually, on the Robert Williams front, because I am just pulling the curtain back, recording on, what night is this, Monday? Recording on a Monday night.
Really? Jet setting. Limousine riding, jet flying.
Oh, man. Not
kiss me. Stealing, wheeling, dealing.
Come on, dog. There's no flag here. You got it. You absolutely have it. All right. But recording on the Monday night, I am like halfway through like a series preview from Boston's perspective. And so I have this fresh in my mind right now. I was going to float out because you were talking about trying to find a space for Robert Williams to kind of be in that roamer role. How would you feel about him on Andrew Wiggins in this series?
I would get the idea, but at the same point, now he's going to have to navigate screens. I mean, I guess it could be a switch, but I'm intrigued. I will say I'm intrigued by that. I don't know if Boston goes there, but I'm intrigued. Treat him like they treated Jimmy Butler when Ime was calling him a big. I get it. I'm wrapping my head around it in real time. I guess the only issue would be if Wiggins the ball handler, maybe it's a switch and now you're back in the same boat you would be in otherwise. But I'm listening. Continue.
Because that's kind of where I landed on if you're trying to get Robert Williams in that specific role. Because if you want to throw out like some nerd numbers out there, like Kevon Looney said, like, why am I getting the face off?
Nerd numbers. What happened on that? What happened on that flight, my guy?
Hey, man. You know, just want to get into the nerdy stuff. Kevon Looney said about 30 off-ball picks per 100 possessions, and that's more than four times as much as Andrew Wiggins did. So I think that's just a different. They use them differently off the ball, obviously. And so if you're worried about some of like the handback actions that they have for Kevon Looney and Steph Curry, like you're not gonna go to state isn't gonna go that way. And use Wiggins as a handoff hub or as an off-ball screener that way. And so I think you have more leeway to place Rob Williams there as a help point. And depending on the health of the knee, like he should be able to close out to Wiggins if the kick goes to him. And if your possessions are ending with Andrew Wiggins trying to attack Robert Williams, I think Boston plays the odds there. And it's like, okay, well, if he gets the best of Rob, then we just transition to our smaller lineup anyway. And if Andrew Wiggins is finishing the possessions, that means Klay Thompson isn't. Steph Curry isn't. If Jordan Poole's on the floor, he isn't. And so if they're trying to get there, like I feel like that's, and it's not a perfect solution, but I feel like that's the closest they can get to him in that role. At least that's my thing, and it could just be completely stupid. But that's where my mind was going.
Completely stupid and strong. But I feel like naturally they'll put him on Looney. And to credit your theory, do you see Al on Wiggins?
If I had to guess, like that's, I think that's probably what they do. Because I think Tatum on Draymond makes sense for them to kind of make any Steph Draymond pick and roll a switch. And they want to take that off the table.
You put Tatum on Draymond, make that a switch. You put Smart on Curry, put Brown on Clay, and then whichever big you want to roam. Yeah. I think we've arrived there. Look at the teamwork thinking out loud.
This is what we do. This is the beauty of the podcast. You know, I throw out ideas. You tell me why they're bad, and then we get to the right answer. This is how it this is how it works. This is why you are the professional, sir.
I'm just an amateur.
Yo, brother. Fake modesty has gone too far.
How do you feel about the lineups, by the way, in this series? Because we've seen them both have very strong small lineups on both ends of the floor. We've seen them have success while big. Who do you think it's more important to have success while big? Is it Looney staying strong, or is it Boston being able to play both their bigs at the same time?
I think it's going to be Boston being able to play both of their bigs at the same time. Because circling back to the Golden State run, particularly their second round series, Golden State being able to win the points in the paint and the rebounding battle is just not what, it certainly wasn't what I expected. Like, even if you hadn't beaten Memphis, I thought it would be because Memphis lost them on off-ball actions, or they turned the ball over and Golden State was able to get out in transition. But basically, they were going to bomb away from it. And the Warriors were able to win that series because they manned the glass and manned the points. And they were able to kill Dallas on the glass, but they've been a bad rebounding team all year long. So that's less surprising. I think for Boston, they're going to need that big lineup to hit because they, in theory, should have the interior advantage on both ends if they do. And so that's why it's important for Al Horford to find a coverage or multiple coverages. That's why it's important for Rob Williams in particular to find a comfort area on the defensive end. Because if he's able to hold up defensively, you can just stash him in the dunker spot on offense if you want to. And if Boston's able to create any sort of advantage, like, that's just a lot. Kevon Looney has been very good defensively. He's not jumping with Rob Williams. And so he's going to be able to create in that way. Also, if you're using him as a roller. Like, we saw Golden State in some drop against Rob Will during the regular season series. I think he can be activated a little bit in this series if he's able to stay on the floor on the other end. So I would go with Boston. What would you say?
I wouldn't disagree with what you said there. I think the small lineup battle is interesting to me because Golden State hasn't had to lean on that lineup to a certain degree, just like Boston hasn't had to lean on their lineup to a certain degree. So for me, it's when did those lineups come out and who wins those minutes? Draymond at the five is a key for Golden State on both ends of the floor. We know what Boston's small lineup can do defensively, as far as switching and mucking everything up and just making it real tough. Which one of those kind of imposes their will in this series? When do they feel like those lineups should come out? And are they going to shift how the other team feels? That's interesting to me. I think that, to your point, it gets interesting if Boston can't play two bigs at the same time because they need that small lineup to be a plus, a bonus. Mm-hmm. And they need to have the defensive impact of Williams and Horford. We saw what that did in the last series. But I think for me, devil's advocate, Golden State also needs Kevon Looney to be able to have, if not the same impact he had in the conference finals, definitely an impact. Mm-hmm. They can't go without him being the big because where else do you go? If it's going to be straight Draymond on the five, that makes it tough. So Looney has to be able to have an impact as far as not just defense, switching onto Tatum and Brown and containing and not fouling, but offensively, his roles have to continue to count. His rebounds have to continue to count. His screening is important. So both these teams are kind of in that same flux, and that's where it's like, I want to see what this looks like. What do they try and do? Because I don't know which team tries to go small first. I feel like it'll be Boston, just based on their run. Because Golden State, you got to give Golden State credit. They have that lineup, and everyone wrote 15 think pieces about it. But they haven't really gone to it unless they have to.
You talked about it during the first round series with Denver that people just used to get Jokic's takes off for whatever reason. But at any rate, but you saw and you pointed out during the back half of that series that, hey, Denver's kind of figuring out some stuff and figuring out how to at least hang with that and then hurt it on the other end. And so if Denver was able to do that with their personnel, like in theory, Boston has much better defensive personnel, just to be frank about it. And so maybe to your point, like you do need the Looney minutes to really hit. So that can be their plus versus, oh no, Looney can't hang. We got to go small. Now we're just feeding them pressure points if we haven't figured out the defense. And on that note, where are you at? Is Jordan Poole your X factor for Golden State in the series?
Klay Thompson is my X factor.
That tracks.
If he, really? If he is playing at that level and shooting at that level, the way they use him, it's going to be very tough. So Jordan Poole is not my X factor. Here's the thing. We talked about it. Dallas just gave Golden State the menu on how to defend against Boston. We know Boston's going to go to matchup hunting at some point in this series. Golden State just had to deal with that. So we know the show and recover is coming. For me, it's can their guards do what Miami's guards couldn't do and poke at the drop and make Boston react? And that's where I think Klay is going to be important. Jordan Poole is going to be important. Andrew Wiggins is going to be important. Those guys have to be able to hit their times when they have those moments and make it count. How do you feel about the matchups? I know I'm opening up a can of worms here.
I can't believe you're asking me the matchup question. This is amazing.
Well, I mean, you always bring it up. So, I mean, I figure I might as well just ask now instead of just waiting for you to ask me, hey, Steve, what do you think about? I don't know. They're going to switch. Leave me alone. Draymond Green on Marcus Smart intrigued me. And I saw that in the first matchup that everyone told me didn't matter, which is fine. It allows Draymond to roam. And now we know how important Marcus Smart has been on ball for Boston. When he's in, you know, when he's the ball handler and screens are coming for him, his kicks result in Boston's other guys getting touches. That's a switch now. If that lessens the impact, I am intrigued. What are your thoughts matchup-wise?
I actually like that look for Golden State because of the reasons you stated. Being able to turn some of those pick and rolls into switches, I think, can neutralize Boston. And again, like, Miami lost the series, but they were able to get Boston in the mud sometimes. It wasn't all just unforced turnovers. Like, they were able to flatten them out some, too. And so if Draymond can do that, as the point that you've made throughout this postseason run, if Smart's getting dribble penetration for you, he's now kicking to the Jays, and they're able to get catch-and-shoot opportunities or attack from there. And if you're taking that off the table, that's a way to bring Boston into the mud unless they can create some stuff elsewhere. I am intrigued with – I guess that's going to be a game within the game I want to watch, because if you do get Draymond on Smart, then he's absolutely going to want to roam. But like Marcus Smart is a good screener and he is good at slipping against switches. And so I wonder if he's able to shake free enough on those slips to kind of poke at that a little. It's going to be tough because it's Draymond. One, he knows what to do. Two, he can get into those physical switches as well, where he can get under you, kind of cut off that roll for you. But if Marcus Smart can generate some stuff there, then it gets a little bit more interesting in the half court. If not Smart, where else would you put Dre, I guess would be my question.
Well, you could always put him on Tatum or Brown, try and cut the water off. And we look at the Dallas series, they just put him on Brunson and said, hey, whatever he does is going to be tough. So, if they went out and said, hey, you guard Jaylen Brown, try and take him off the table early, I wouldn't be surprised by that move. The dribble penetration battle is going to be interesting.
We on the same page?
It's no fun. Sorry. Turn your page, sir. But the dribble penetration is going to be fun because the Warriors have secretly had a lot of success scoring in the paint on this run. And their ability to contain the drive against Dallas was huge. And they're going to have to find a way to get in the paint in this series. And Boston's coming off a series where they cut off the paint. And the size and length gets interesting. So can they get the same drives? And back to Boston, like they're coming off a series where that dribble penetration was really important. You know, everyone wants to talk about the half court execution or what sets they're running, what they're trying to do. They tried to run something. Once it stopped, they put their head down and drove and played out of it. And we've seen throughout the playoffs, Golden State kind of go back and forth with how they deal with that. Against Denver, I think it took them off guard a little bit. Against Memphis, we saw against Ja, there's a lot of space. Other guys had room to operate once Ja went down. Against Dallas, they were a whole different team. They were locked in on containing the drive. They were showing early help. They were keeping it all in front. Can they have that same mindset against Boston? Because quiet as kept, that Boston-Miami series came down to Boston knowing if we just put our head down and take three dribbles, Miami's going to bring all the help. And we can at least get a kick out of that and play out of that. Is Golden State going to hit the nuance and hit the right notes there? Or is it going to be a layup fest?
I got you. Now, I guess just circle back to the other question. This is kind of where I went Jordan Poole's going to be. Because, like, on the other end of the floor, like, I think if Boston does go into mismatch hunting mode, like, I think he's going to be the guy for them. And so wondering how he's going to hold up is going to be key. But to your point, the drives are going to be so important. And he and Steph, or I guess aside from Steph, like he is the guy that can get it off the bounce and really attack and get downhill, get 2 feet in the paint, and then make a play from there. And so if Boston is able to contain him as well, you're turning Golden State into a bunch of jump shooters, which they can still win that way. You have Steph, you have Poole, you have Clay. But that's a tough diet to live on against a defense like this. If they're able to stay out of the paint, that's more rebounds, that's more transition opportunities. You don't have to worry about some of the half-court questions for Boston if they're not in the half-court. I don't know.
So Golden State, a jump shooting team. Is Charles Barkley your ally?
Oh, brother, no. I am saying that Boston will attempt to do that to Golden State. They want to cut off those drives, which answers my earlier question. Like, so I was wondering, do you force step downhill and try to contain from there? But now I'm just like, okay, probably not. Let's see if you can make him. It sounds wild to say make Steph beat you with pull-ups because, of course, he can do that. But containing the dribble penetration, not making easier easier catch and shoot opportunities pop up wouldn't make more sense.
How do you feel about Boston switching against Golden State? Do you feel like Golden State can operate offensively in the half court? Boston has personnel. They have the mindset to bog them down. In the Dallas series, Golden State didn't really cooperate for the majority of it as far as getting away from the off-ball stuff. We saw Boston take it off the board against Miami. How do you feel about that?
I feel pretty solid about the switching. On that front, this is where I go to the other two guard. I'm a little worried about Jaylen Brown in this specific context. Very, very, very good on-ball defender. Very strong. You're not really moving him if you try to get your shoulder into his chest. Very quick laterally. Asking him to navigate two or three screening actions gets a little iffy for him. And there were enough possessions that popped up during the regular season series that didn't matter because of personnel. But there were enough plays in that to where it's like, it's interesting that Steph is calling for a screen to get Jaylen Brown switched onto him before he's flying off of that Kevon Looney screen in their pit action. It's interesting he's making him do that. It's interesting that they're screening away on the weak side before doing something, knowing that Jaylen has to be the helper if it calls for it. And so on that front, I want to see how locked in he's going to be off the ball. Because in that Miami series, Derek White was just able to turn off Max Strus's water. Jaylen didn't really have to worry about that. And there were still some blips throughout that series from him off ball. Golden State is going to present an entirely different story. I think we were talking about matchups a little bit earlier in the pod, and like he's probably going to get the Klay Thompson assignment. That could be problematic if he's not locked in. It may be easy for him to switch the things in front of him, but if it's a switch and now Steph's turned around setting a bat screen on him, and now you have to communicate that, like the communication for Boston in general is just going to be wildly important because they do have the personnel to switch all this stuff and stay attached. But you're one late point switch away from Golden State waltzing to the rim. And that's a lot with them coming off of a 7-game series. It's going to be, I'll call it early. Like, I think Golden State wins game.
Wow. A bold prediction from Nikias Duncan, folks. Do they win game two?
I'm not going to do the full game by game thing, but I think they get game one. Like, I just think Golden State's offense and what they're able to do. And again, Boston is coming off of this 7-game series. Golden State's been waiting for a little bit. I just think it's going to take them a little bit of time to get settled in.
Well, I mean, it's a different challenge, but at the same time, I feel like that's one of the things in my head before we start this. Can Boston have the switches, have the activity off ball to bring Golden State closer to the mud and take some of that stuff off the table, get them deeper in the clock, get them to doing less things movement-wise? Because we've seen the stretches, even the Dallas series, where they kind of just stop doing what they're supposed to do execution-wise and what the trouble that causes. And Boston has the personnel and the mindset to get that to happen. But they can be physical and bring that game within the margins there. It gets interesting. Like, that's where I'm intrigued. Because if Boston can do that, now we're talking about a different series. You know, I think we're talking about a lot of it. Like, and don't get me wrong, Golden State is a different challenge offensively. But if Boston can take that away, it's similar to what they faced. And yeah, you have Steph Curry in pick and roll, but who else is going to get a bucket? If they're relying just on pick and roll and penetration, it's kind of a win for Boston. So that's the battle for me. Golden State has to take care of the ball and hit the blend offensively to where the ball is moving, the ball is popping, they're forcing rotation. Now we hit you with pick and roll. Now we hit you with off ball. We're just kind of moving you around, being a moving target. If I'm Boston, let's get you in the mud. Let's be physical. Let's be active. Let's take your off ball stuff off. Slow your tempo down. Figure it out on the other end. That's been Boston's formula. Our defense gives us just enough. And offensively, we find a way to attack your points on the other end. It's not pretty. Their offense is not pretty. No disrespect. But hey, we're going to figure out whatever your pressure point is. We're going to hit it and create out of that. And that's a unique point. That's a unique deal. We haven't had a lot of playoff teams that just find the weakness and attack that. Usually they bring the weakness, you know, their star power exploits the weakness. Boston just kind of finds it. And then once they find it, well, that's what we're going to do whenever we're stuck. And you think it doesn't matter until the game's close and it's a fourth quarter. And now, oh, the thing you couldn't do, we're picking on now. So it's going to be fun, man.
It's going to be a lot of fun. I have a couple more Boston-related questions that I think I'll be done.
No!
Never mind. Thank you for listening to this episode of Oh, Jesus. I'll be quick, I promise. On the Tatum front, because I feel like we haven't talked a ton about him offensively. Were you intrigued by him seeing some two to the ball during the regular season series? And do you think that continues?
In pick and roll or just in general?
Yeah, in pick and roll.
As far as the bigs or their guards?
The bigs.
I was intrigued. I was intrigued by them putting two on the ball. I think that was the first clip I threw on the old Twitter. Two on the ball with Tatum. That's going to be interesting to see how they treat him. Is it going to be a switch? Is it going to be a drop? Is it going to be two on the ball? I think I know what they're going to do with the guard. You know, if they try and attack Curry, Poole, I think we know it's going to be show and recover. We've seen that for a whole series. Mm-hmm. With Looney, do they just carry over the Dallas game plan and just switch and play out of that? I think I would anticipate they go with that right out of the jump. I don't know if they'll go two on the ball that much. Just thinking about the lineups, I just don't know that they'll throw that out there in this scenario. Because as good of a coverage as it is, it opens up the threat of Tatum being a scorer and a playmaker. Because mm-hmm. he can go get buckets. And then if you're putting two on the ball, they can just run him in pick and roll and open something up. And that's a dangerous combination for Boston. So I anticipate we see Looney switching to start after the work he did against Luka, and they may adjust from that. But I don't think we'll see straight traps two on the ball to start. I've been wrong before, though. What do I know? I'm just a guy who knows nothing about basketball.
Not sure who said that, but they were.
Oh, I can give you the list.
we'll save that for the Patreon content. Anyway, last Boston thing, just on the bench front, because you did mention his name a little bit earlier. What kind of role does Peyton Pritchard play in this series, if at all?
A bucket getter. He's got to be a scorer. Mm-hmm. I think the shift in that Miami series was, hey, we need to win, so we need to guard. So we're going to put those lineups out there that are going to guard. Now, they may get to that in this series, but I don't think it's going to start that way. I think Pritchard's going to get the opportunity to see if he can stay on the court in this series. And with the lineups they face, he may have a better chance. Because while he probably will be hunted, who's he going to be hunted by? That's going to be the interesting point. Like, is it going to be Clay and Wiggins post-ups? Because if that happens, we're talking a different story. Like, if they play him off the court, that gets interesting. But I don't know that Pritchard's going to be a liability right from the jump. To me, I think he's going to have the opportunity to prove himself. They need his offense overall in this series, mm-hmm. especially if Golden State has it humming. So they need him to play. For me, I just thought that Miami series took a shift where they knew Jimmy's going to come at you. We can't afford to give them that. Let's take you off the court. Now, Golden State could find something like that, but until they do, I don't think he's going to be just sitting on the bench.
Okay. I would say, at least looking at some like the hybrid second units, like maybe that is the Jordan Poole thing that he tries to pick at. And I think to your point, like I think he'll have more of a natural hiding place if Moses Moody is still in the lineup. I think that would be kind of a hiding place for him.
Moses Moody.
That's the one. So I'm with you on that front. Actually, one more thing. I have a Golden State question for you. How much zone do you think they throw out at Boston? Because Miami tried, and it was mostly fine after the first game they saw it.
That's the funny part. I felt like Miami, I thought Miami would try it more than they did, to be honest with you. I think Golden State, their ability to have multiple coverages is going to be a key. And if they can just throw multiple things at Boston, that's something Boston hasn't quite seen. But they've seen different game plans, and they've conquered different game plans. And I don't know how they handle the blend once they get in the rhythm. Ideally, in the Miami series, you would have thought the zone would have been the breaker. Golden State zone helps them because, hey, we take you out of matchup hunting. We take you out of what you're trying to attack offensively. We know you want a matchup hunt in the half court. We bog you down. Now we go on the other end. So I think we'll see a good mix of zone. How Boston handles that is going to be interesting, but I think we see a good mix.
All right. Well, I am good. Did you have any more thoughts to add on the series? Any stray notes, theme things, questions that you want?
Wiggins has to show up. I think this is a big Wiggins series. It's a big Klay Thompson series. They need their wings and guards to show up in a big way. They need them to make Boston pay on that end. For Boston, it's going to take a collective effort. Their defense has to be locked in. They've got to bring Golden State into the mud, force turnovers, be active, contest shots, and figure out enough stuff in the half court to make it work. If they can't, it gets interesting. But I think it's going to be a fun series. It's going to be some fun times. We're going to have some fun talks. There's no Chris Middleton. There's no Chris Paul. We can really enjoy basketball this year.
Wow. What a shot. What? That's amazing. What we can really enjoy basketball this year? What does that mean?
On the podcast.
On the you Wait a minute. I had plenty of fun. What do you mean?
We was the key word.
Yeah, me, myself, and I. What do you mean? We,
Look here, Nekonse. Just take us home, all right?
Nekonse, that's amazing. What a shot. Actually, no. Who's your pick? Who do you have?
Who do I have?
Yeah, who do you have?
Golden State in 7.
Ah, I see. I see. I am going to take Boston in 6. There we go.
Did you get some DMs? Or?
No, I didn't. I just... I'm sure I will now, but no, I did not. I do think Boston's going to be able to sort through enough defense. Like, I do think they're going to be able to bother Golden State's half court a little bit. And they'll have some matchups to pick at on the other end. And even in the event that they can't find something for Rob Williams, they're putting Grant Williams in his place. And we've seen, and I'm not going to make it a whole nother point, but I want to see what coverage Grant Williams is in too, if he's playing alongside Horford. Because they threw in some drop with him against Miami. I don't know if you do that against Golden State, unless it's like a Wiggins pick and roll. You just want to keep him. Make him a jump shooter. But I think Boston, I believe in Boston's defense. I think
I hear you. It's going to be a battle. I think Boston defense brings a lot to the table. I'm going to upgrade mine to Warriors in 6.
All right.
If Golden State can do the things they're supposed to do offensively with the movement, with their blend, and be active enough defensively, it's going to be tough for Boston to match it. It's a different challenge. You know, this is a team that can score the basketball. And they've been able to use their defense to give them a wider margin of error. If Golden State can pick at that and poke at that, that's going to kind of shut that down a little bit. So in theory, if Golden State can hit the right notes, I think they win this series. Now, if Boston can bring them in the mud, there's no doubt they have a big chance to win this series. Don't take this prediction as me throwing them over the top rope. Mm-hmm. If Boston can get this in the mud, no surprise they win the series. But I'm going to lean on Golden State's experience, their hunger, their mission. They're on their way to try and get another one. I don't know if they're going to tap out coming this close. So,
I think that's kind of like the, as someone who doesn't have a vested interest in either one of these teams, like I think that's the fun of it. Like it's going to feel kind of storybook no matter who. Golden State after this run, like again, 6 finals in 8 years. They had the big gap, and now they're back here. If Steph gets another one, if they're able to win, Klay gets another ring after the injury study went through. Like, it's going to be a great story. And for this Boston team, the Jays going through, should they be broken up? Should it be traded? Yada, yada, yada. All the conference finals losses that they've dealt with, they finally break through this year. Ime Udoka in year 1. the stuff that was talked about him early in the season for Boston to turn into the team they turned into in 2022. Like, it's going to be a great story whoever wins it. And I'm with you. Like, me picking Boston does not mean I think Golden State is bad or anything like that. But I'm rolling with Boston in this one. I like the toughness. I like the defensive versatility, the size that they have. I think they'll bring Golden State in the mud enough.
I don't blame you. I understand. He's trying to get another driver to get you some pizza, huh?
Oh, brother. That's my cue. Thank you for listening to this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you have not already, please subscribe to us. We are on Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. You can find me on Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can find Steve on Twitter at SteveJones20. And with that, we will catch y'all after game one.
Wait, what?